Gente, sejam bem-vindos a mais um MC One on One. Hoje, no MC One on One, uma entrevista que vai ser em inglês, mas vai estar com legendas em português lá no YouTube, tá? Pra quem quiser depois ver essa entrevista. Daqui a algumas semanas, tá? Se você tá vendo isso recentemente, ouvindo isso recentemente aí no podcast, vai estar presente com legendas em português no YouTube um pouco depois, tá? Algumas semanas depois. Mas se você quiser curtir essa entrevista em inglês, sinta-se à vontade para treinar o inglês e se deliciar com esse inglês do cara, porque o meu ainda é macarrônico, do cara é show de bola, tá bom? So, today with me, someone that is amazingly good in what he does. I can tell the first time I have contact with his content, I guess was in Instagram, and kind of shocked me the way he does content on Instagram. How he takes care of every single detail, not only the graphics, not only what a kind of content he pick up to put on the images, but also how he takes care of the right disposition on the screen. What should appear, how should appear, what is on the center, what is not in the center, how Instagram works, totally different than the others, how to use the carousel from the Instagram for doing content. All those things, for me at least, I saw first with this guy. This guy that, believe it or not, I found a little bit weird, because I was doing a training at my company, and he knows that because from time to time people poke in about it. But I was doing a training, a harassment training at my company. Believe me, it's a mandatory training. I have to do every year. State of California requests that. And then I noticed that the guy that is very upset, very angry, as an example of how, what not to do at your company, was someone that I knew. Someone that I saw it before. And to my surprise, Michael Fisher, aka Noah as Mr. Mobile, was the guy. So, Michael, are you there, my friend?
I am indeed, and I had no idea, or I had forgotten, that you had encountered me first in such a strange and compromising role from my past. Thank you for reminding me of that.
How many people are every year or time to time someone comes and say the same story to you, right?
Oh, man. You know, but it's always a surprise because it doesn't happen often enough. It only happens once about every 3 weeks. It's just often enough that I forget about it in between times because, you know, folks, when you're an actor and you are taking roles for the paycheck as you need to, you don't expect that 11 years later someone's going to say, hey, they're still using that video of you. That training video of you being a deeply problematic and offensive coworker.
It's very funny, though.
The train
it's
employees.
Very funny.
Was this one where I was I was the guy who was too drunk at the company party, or was I insensitive about...
Insensitive. Is the one insensitive, complaining?
Yeah, sounds right. Yeah. Yeah. Like threatening HR for my paycheck. I think I was yelling at an HR representative at one point. Those were fun videos to make.
Yeah. Yeah. That video, I think everybody goes back because that's the same video that I used since then as a mandatory video for all companies based on California.
Great. That's just great.
So believe me, that's why once in a while there's some gaps because when... Like every company has, it's mandatory by the law. So sure. There is some thresholds for the company. So there's a target date. So that's why from time to time, when those target dates are triggered by the state, everybody's doing the same training.
Yeah, like a wave shows up. It is true. Yeah, it'll be like, sometimes you won't hear about it for 3 months. And then, four times in a week. So thank you for shining some light on that. I'm telling you, my acting professor, we didn't listen to him. He said in college, he's like, listen, if they buy you out, if they bring you in to shoot something and they offer you a buyout, think hard about taking it. Maybe don't take it because they can run that forever. And then forever, you'll be the guy on the... You know, the sexually transmitted infection poster, or you're the insensitive guy at the workplace who's, making fun of somebody for not eating on Ramadan or something. Or like people show me these screenshots and I'm like, yep, that's
funny,
my
that's
legacy.
So funny.
Yeah.
Okay. But that's funny because a lot of people don't know, actually, you start as an actor, at least early on your career, you start as an actor. And yeah. I want to know about that. Who was Michael? Who was that little kid that once somehow dream about something that may result on a content creator just like you?
It's funny when people ask you why they do, you know, like what you, how you became a YouTuber, right? I always flash back to about third grade when people started, you know, you're about 9 years old, 10 years old, and people start asking you, well, what do you think you want to be when you grow up? And when I was 9 or 10 years old, YouTube, of course, did not exist. And no occupation quite like a YouTuber existed. The closest we got back in the day as kids was the dream job was always video game tester.
Oh yeah. Right?
So you remember wanting to be,
if you work at Nintendo as an expert.
Right. Yeah. It's like, can you imagine getting paid to play video games? I can't imagine a better job. And that's ultimately, I mean, that is what has kept me in this job for so long, in that it is the thing I was doing already. And when I found out that people got paid for it, because I was online and message boards sharing my opinions in comment sections at Engadget and Howard forums and all these places in 2006 or before. And when I found out there were people getting paid for it, I wanted to do that. But back well before all of that, have you ever had a situation where someone asks you, you know, maybe you're in high school, what do you want to do with your life?
That's very common. You have no idea sometimes. Or sometimes you say very silly, I want to be a firefighter or a cop, whatever.
Or an astronaut or something. Something like that. Right. Yeah. Well, I could never narrow it down in high school. When the time came on my high school graduation day, that's what everyone always asks you. We go out to lunch and the waiter said, oh, congratulations, you graduated. Well, what are you going to do? Well, I remember I was like, I want to join the Navy, but I also want to like drive trucks across the country. I want to travel a lot. I want to build stuff. I would like to work at a newspaper. I had 9 things, right?
You have too many stuff at your head at the same time that you consider would be possible because you enjoyed them.
Correct. I enjoyed too many things. And when I went to college, I realized that the closest I could get to doing all those things was to go into acting, because it's the only career where you, if you're lucky, many times a year, you inhabit someone else's life. And you can be a truck driver and an astronaut and a janitor and a murderer. You can be 9 different things over the course of a year if you're lucky. So that's what I started studying. And that's what I ultimately graduated with a degree in acting in 2008, 2007. And got very lucky. The sound booth I am sitting in right now is a result of being hired while I was in college to do voiceovers, books on tape for law students. Sounds very dry. It was.
But it was, to be honest, that voice is really good. I mean, your voice is really good. And I noticed your voice is somehow also a construction of a better voice. It's something we notice in your videos, you know. But you have to be on the market to notice that. I believe people in general, they don't notice that because it's really well done.
Yeah, it's true. You know, I think it's the Mr. Mobile voice is certainly a very, you know, the Pocket Now Michael voice, the Mr. Mobile voice, the presenter voice does come out. And it's a result of spending so long in this booth, in this tiny booth, churning out legal opinions for a company that was called Audio Case Files. And they gave me a full-time voiceover job after working for them freelance for a while. We moved to Boston. And then you ever have one of those years where everything just goes wrong? Everything fell apart.
Do I have to pick one as an example?
Well, we've all had a few of them, right? The older you get, the more of those years you have. Well, for me, that was 2011. I entered 2011 with a relationship. I had a girlfriend and 2 grandmothers and a steady job. And 2011 ended and I didn't have any of that. It sucked. That was the worst year.
It's like the world is falling apart in your head and you think the life is over.
Yeah, pretty much. And I'm sitting there in bed at night going, gosh, well, am I going to go back to selling cell phones? Because I enjoyed that, but because I'm a geek for phones. But I don't know. Do I want to be doing that at this point in my life?
You did the selling phones as a job.
In college, yeah. I skipped over that. But in college for 4 years, I spent selling cell phones. And I loved it. I loved talking about the phones. But retail jobs tend to grind you down. They make you hate after a while, you know? Yeah. So I didn't want to go back to that, but I was entertaining it because you got to pay rent. And that's when I thought, you know, no one's going to hire me because I have opinions about tech. I want to share them, but I have no writing experience that's not 8 years old. And I have no credentials and I don't know anybody in the industry, but I'll apply anyway. So I applied to sites like Gizmodo and The Verge and all the, you know.
You went for the big ones. Let's see what comes out.
I went for whoever was hiring, right?
Yeah.
Pocket Now at the time had a high profile because it was leaking all kinds of stuff. I mean, they were really good at leaking stuff. And they were hiring. And they asked me to send in some samples. I did. I wrote. That's a great job, by the way. If you have a job opportunity that says write samples for us rather than show us what you've written in the past. Well, as a beginner, it's like rolling out the red carpet. Oh, I can create something for you. Like, here you go. So we submitted a couple of those. They liked them. They asked for a video audition. They're like, hey, we really want to lean into YouTube. Would you create a video review for us? Yeah, I can do that. I had some YouTube experience from a project I had been doing with my dad for a couple years. So I created a project with your dad.
I'm curious about that. What it was.
So in 2006, when YouTube was very, very new, my dad had a flip video camera. You remember the Mino flip cameras? They're like an iPod Nano. These things were cool, by the way. You'd like hit a switch and a USB drive would flip up. Anyway, he had one of these. And my dad
Paul McCartney did some advertisement about it, I guess. Yeah.
Yeah, I think that's right. Wow, I did not remember that. I think you're right. He had one of these and he liked it. But my dad builds model ships and they're really awesome. Can I swear on this podcast or not?
Sure. Right? It's open for that. Don't go for it, really, man.
Badass. They were just badass model boats and I loved them. And he still makes them. My dad's an amazing craftsman. So I said, Dad, let's take this camera. We'll film your boats. We'll put them on YouTube. Maybe somebody will watch them. I don't know. Let's just have fun. And we did. And like 2 years later, I get an email from Google that's like, hey, you have to file tax papers. And if you don't, this $1,000 that's sitting here is not going to be yours anymore. And I'm like,
what?
What are you talking about? There's what? I guess we had turned on ads on the YouTube videos and they had made a lot of money for us at the time. It was like, oh, wow, my God. So we turned that into a business that still exists today. About once or twice a year, we'll upload a new video on Rapid Nadion on YouTube featuring sinking model Titanics and rockets and explosions.
That's cool.
It's fun. We have a great time doing it. So that's where I had my experience from when I made that video for Pocket Now. They liked it. And then Jaime Rivera, Brandon Miniman, names you still recognize today, taught me a lot about making tech videos. And I was able to combine their expertise and their training with my own experience. And we had 3 or 4 years there where we created some really fun stuff. And that took us up to about 2015. And that was the era of my life where I was like, oh, wow, okay, people care about my opinions. And we can monetize that in a way that I can support myself doing what I love again.
Also, so, the platforms are much more mature, especially YouTube at that time.
Definitely. Yeah, the bar had been raised by sites like, most prominently, The Verge. You couldn't just show up on YouTube and point a camera at a product in a noisy trade show floor and have no cuts and no editing and just expect it to do well anymore. That very quickly went away. And my entire time at Pocket Now, we spent trying to get that quality up. And I said it already, but to Jaime Rivera's credit that, you know, we both were quite stubborn in that. And we were like, we're not going to run these crappy videos anymore. We're going to try to do better. We're going to try and do what The Verge does with 8 people with 1 person.
That's very common worldwide. Believe me, everybody knows your pain.
Yeah, you know, you get it, right? But it was a source of pride to me because we were able to do that often. We kicked out product that I thought was at least in the same league as those guys, and we were not expending nearly the resources.
But setting the bar like that, it's good because your learning curve becomes super fast.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And it encourages you to rise to it, right? It's like no one ever. I don't know if there's a there's probably a saying for it, but no one ever. Very rarely do people do excellent work when they're comfortable, when they're fat and happy. You know, some of my the work I'm proudest of has come from my hungriest moments or my most uncertain ones. So that's what it was. It was just a struggle that whole time. And that took us all the way up to 2015.
I totally agree. Too much ice cream keeps you on the couch, man. I know the feeling, you know, like when we are challenged, not by someone, but by the conditions.
Yeah,
that's where the best of you came out.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. I mean, there are, you know, I've been very comfortable. It's so hot in the sound booth. The sound insulation is shifting. Sorry, I know you can't hear that, but it's very creepy right over my left ear. It sounds like a ghost.
Right now,
it's
perfect. Oh, really? okay, we are recording. Don't worry. If something happens, if a poltergeist happens,
the world will know about it, right?
Yes, we're going to be here, and then I'm going to share with Dan Aykroyd.
it's funny. I look at some of the work that I do that I've done over the past, not the past year. The past year has been very, very challenging. But the couple years leading up to that, where it's like, I hope the audience can't tell. I can always tell when I'm looking at my stuff. I'm like, oh yeah, I was just doing this because it was late on a Friday and I needed to get the video out. And I was just fat and happy.
You can feel. I know, because you have the memories. You have a full story on the backstage. What happened?
Right.
How you feel. And do you have those weird moments also when you do a video that is just like a normal process of doing a video and you don't expect a shit this go anywhere else than average views or something that is not hyped, not anything, and then suddenly that thing just blows.
Goes crazy. Yeah, man. That happened to me during quarantine. Well, actually, before that. Do you remember Jibo, the little social robot?
So that's a pity they stop of it. Actually, that robot was super cool. I love the idea, you know, with emotions and everything.
Yeah, and it totally worked on me. I mean, you know, I did the Jibo review, I got the review unit, and while I still had the review unit, the company went bankrupt. So I was, well, now I've got this robot in my living room. And I've become attached to him. I'm not embarrassed to say I became attached to him. And when the company went under and it was determined that Jibo, which relies on the servers, can't really exist anymore, I was so affected by that emotionally that I had to do a video. I knew it wasn't going to do well, but I had to do it. I had to speak my mind about this thing. And
it's
that
like
video
losing
did,
a friend.
It was. And that video did much better than I ever expected it to. It was exactly what you were talking about. It's like the inverse of what happens when you're like, oh, I'm one of only 15 people to have this flagship phone and it's going to do great. And then it doesn't because whatever. It's always much nicer when the reverse happens and you're like, look, I just have to say this video because I have to say it. And I think that often comes from a place that is very relatable to people. There's a passion to it. There's a need
real
to make
feelings.
That content. Yeah. And more often than not, that pays off. That has launched several series that have done very well for me on YouTube. It's always best when the number one reason you make the video is because you had no choice. You had to make it. You had something to say and you had to say it.
It's on your head. You have to put it out.
Correct. Yeah.
I know. I know the feeling. I know the feeling. Sometimes, you know, it's going to be creepy. I'm going to say now a little bit, but I hate the NFC technology. I think it's very old, very outdated. Everything you can do with NFC, you can do with Bluetooth 5 standards.
Sure.
So even proximity payment, everything with more security and everything. So there's tons of reasons why I hate it, but it's a personal thing, you know, it's a personal like or dislike stuff. So NFC for me, it's old technology, should not be on phones or anywhere else anymore. And then I made a video about it. And I said, you know what? I got to make this video. I know it's not the kind of video I want to do it. And I made it. And I put it like, I hate NFC. That's the title. I hate NFC. I don't like to put hate words or any kind of hate feeling, right?
Right.
But that was the truth.
It's how you felt.
I hate it, you know? Also because when you are creating a new product like a smartphone, one of the biggest struggles right now, are the antennas, and if NFC is a problem about that, creates some interference.
Makes
but
sense.
There's another yep. another point about that. But as technology itself, I don't like it. I hate it. And
how did
I made
it do?
The video. Yeah, I made the video, you know?
Yeah.
And I got surprised by the views, and I got surprised even more because there are some fanboys of NFC's technology. I couldn't believe that. I understand when you have Apple fanboys, Samsung fanboys. I understand sure. OnePlus, whatever brand. You know, I understand right. people got attached to brands. They love brands. But yeah. NFC, what the hell?
You know, it doesn't surprise me. It doesn't surprise me at all. You will find people who will ride for anything. I mean, people want to be members of a tribe, right?
Correct.
So how did the video do? Did it do well?
It did well. It Good. Did. It's funny because the other day I also did a video like this, something that's even the opposite, actually, this case. I don't want to talk about, sometimes I have this struggle. Should I talk about something really basic? Or should I talk about something that is really advanced? Or how to bridge the gap, you know?
Right.
And then on the afternoons on Monday is when I do the tech content on my website, on my channel. And I first go to Twitch on the afternoon, and all the closest guys that are in Twitch watching, we do some kind of votation, ideas and votation for the live stream at night, what's going to be the subject. And people vote for that, and was the RAM memory. It's about memory. RAM.
Wow.
And I said, okay, come on, guys, RAM? Really? Who don't know RAM? What's the point? Why should I do that? So I don't want to do it, but because it was voted, I said, okay, let's do RAM, and that's it. And I did it. And that one, believe it or not, has the most comments and a lot of views, but the most comments ever. Because a lot of people still have doubts about memory and RAM. What is that about?
For sure. Yeah, no, and sometimes it takes inviting that external opinion to have a successful moment, to have something worth doing. I mean, because we can't do it. Like YouTube, it drives me nuts because YouTube is such a, and maybe Twitch, is such a place where people tend to value just you. That's why when we built the Mr. Mobile channel, it was by design. It was like, no, this isn't going to be a brand channel. There's not going to be five hosts. It's just you. It's Michael Fisher. And people come because they want to hang out with you. But like, if you spend that long in your own echo chamber, you tend to like repeat the same patterns. You tend to do the same things. And like, unless you're bringing in friends all the time to like bounce ideas off of, or the audience to say, hey, what do you guys want to see? What do you folks want to see? Like that's, you end up stuck in your own rut. So in some ways, like I've always wanted to do this kind of work with a team, a small team. Pocket Now was, you know, the people who I interacted with every day were the four or five people, maybe three or four sometimes, you know, at Mobile Nations with Mr. Mobile, it was more, but not many more, you know, eight or nine, there's a 50, 60, 70 person team, but it was like, you know, eight or nine with hanging out with the Mr. Mobile thing. And like having all those people, all of whom I will still maintain are smarter than me, like to bounce ideas off of and to give me guidance and content. Like I like that a lot more than being out there on your own rowboat, every man for himself.
It's better to be in an island, right? Alone in an island.
I mean, yeah, like, well, look, to be clear, there are some things that are awesome about it.
I know, the peace.
You know, right? You know what I'm talking about. Like, I remember this from my acting days. There is nothing more empowering, nothing more freeing, and nothing more satisfying than being your own boss and knowing that every little bit of work you put in benefits you directly and not anyone else who you have to spend any brain power on. Are they worth, what are they bringing to this? So there are advantages and disadvantages to both sides. I think the best way to go is to have that model, to be your own business, and then to have some really close friends around you who can help.
Honestly, feedback.
Yeah. And sometimes help you create too. David Kogan is out there doing important work out there, but he runs a channel called The Unlocker and a website. And we very frequently do videos together, and it's really, really wonderful. I mean, it's very nice to have somebody else there whose content you respect, whose ideas you trust, and who thinks differently from you do to, you know, so that you can do better work, so that you can each do better work and then have beers at the end of the day. 'Cause that's fun too.
That's good because we are talking about someone else or friends around that you usually get in contact with them, and they give feedback to you, sometimes spontaneously, sometimes you may ask for it. But what about the audience? How do you manage the feedback from the audience? How much that interfere in your content? How much you avoid to interfere? Because sometimes also it's a trap.
It can be a trap. Yeah, it's funny. I think this is the number one thing that probably took up a lot of my time, my mental energy early on, because it's hurtful. I have a friend who runs a restaurant and bar. And one day I asked him, do you read your Yelp reviews and your Google reviews? Because they're quite good. He's like, no, I can't. I'm like, why? They're good. He's like, I know. But I'm the type of person, I can scroll through 20 or 30 positive comments, and then if I see one negative one, it'll ruin my whole day. And I get it. There's a part of me that's like that too, and I understand it. YouTube makes it a lot easier these days. It really does. The platform itself, if you are the type of creator like me, where you come on, premiere a video, invite the audience, the people who show up tend to be your number one fans, your core audience. So they're very nice to you. And then you engage with that and you kind of hang out there for a half a day. And even though they're nice to you, if they're an audience that's good to you in every way, as mine very much is, they will point out where you've gotten something wrong or where there's clarification needed, or maybe you didn't have the best video, whatever. And you can engage with them in a respectful way long days before the trolls even show up. And then when trolls do show up, I ban them forever. I have no time.
You should not do that. Why? Oh my God. That's something I'm learning. Hey, look, this is my 145th interview, you know? It's 145th. Yeah. So it's a lot so far. And now with content creators. And one thing I learned, and that started a long time ago, right in the beginning, when I interview a guy that is, he's crazy. He's a Brazilian guy. He got a channel. He got this technical store to repair phones, stuff like that. Okay. He does like in the garage at home, you know? Cool. And he opened a channel, and the name of the channel was Dr. Reclama. Translating literally is Dr. Complain.
Dr. Complain.
He complains about every single, his channel is to complain about every single thing he wants, and he focuses on technology. So whatever product lands on his table, he will not say the good side of it, only complains. So that's his channel.
Interesting.
In the beginning, you look at that to say, what the heck is that, right? Even on the name, you can figure out already what it is. But say, why, right? And then you notice this is kind of a joke, right? This is a kind of a joke, like having a channel that only say bad things about products, a kind of joke.
And it's
he incorporates this persona, you know, this character. It's super fun. It's super fun. And then one day he mentioned to me, I brought him to the program, I interviewed him, and he said, you know, I figure out something new. The guy's quite crazy, you know, so we have to be ready for that one. And he said, I figure out something new. I said, yes, what it is? He said, I figure out, Marcel, the hater algorithm. And I said, what?
Oh no.
What? The hater algorithm?
Weaponizing haters.
Yeah. And then he continues and he say, you know, like there's a big difference between someone who loves your channel and someone who hates your channel. Sure. Lovers or followers, they are very similar. But lovers, they tend to watch more your content. Not all your content. They just watch more your content. They tend to do more likes. But not all videos on the channel likes. Most of them, but not all of them. They tend to comment when they see something good or something they believe they should comment and somehow support you.
Yeah.
And that's what lovers does, but not subscribers. Subscribers from time to time, maybe. But haters, Marcel, haters, they watch all your videos 100%. I said, yes, that's true. Yeah. And they find problems and they comment all the problems you may have in your video, no matter what. If the light is bad, if the sound is bad, if you said something that is not correct on the language, whatever, they will comment. And I said, yes, that's true. I know haters, that's the behavior. So that's why my channel has super engagement.
Yeah. Now, I mean, you've got those guys. They're always clicking the thumbs down arrow. They're always clicking down, commenting.
And then he look at me to finish this conversation. He look at me and say, that's why I figure out the hater algorithm. I said, what the hell is that? He said, I start working to make them comment more. So every title in my videos, I make a mistake on the word by purpose because I know they're gonna comment over, and there's like 1,000 comments about this word is wrong.
Oh, come on. I gotta admire that. I admire it. It's a great way to game. It's a great way to benefit from people who are trying to hurt you. There is a Shakespearean degree of poetry to that. I love it.
It's very funny.
It is. And look, when I ban them from the comment section, they can still watch the videos. It's fine.
I know. I hardly ban someone from the comment section unless they are somehow
abusive.
Yeah. You know.
Yeah, No, I don't. Yeah. I don't ban people for saying I didn't like your video. You know,
it's also like, very time consuming. I can tell you.
It is. It's just, I don't do it unless it comes up in those times when I'm hanging out in the comments. And like, my thing is this: the only, besides being abusive or abusing someone else in the comment section, I don't go in for that. The sort of legal question in my head, the defining line of demarcation is this the kind of person I want hanging around me, virtually or not? If not, if this is the kind of person who starts fights, calls people names, or even wants to start flame wars about platform Apple versus Android kind of stuff, if you use the word sheeple, if you want to question vaccines, if you want to do any of these stupid things, like I have no time for that. And I am enormously happy to shadow ban you so that not only are you never going to show up on the site again, but you will never know that because the site still...
That's the best.
That is the best. It's the best feature the internet ever invented. And I love the bar analogy. I love the analogy of my YouTube channel is a tavern. I'm the bartender. If you come in and you're an asshole, you will never come back in here again. You will dream that you came back in here.
That's really good. Yeah.
But no one will ever see your stuff again. And it's great. And I wish shadow banning had been around since the beginning of the internet. It's an unpopular, it's a controversial opinion, but usually among assholes. So fuck.
Yeah. Don't worry about it. You know, like, come on.
Yeah.
You know, but there is, I'm not defending haters. Come on. I suffer from the same disease, believe me. But
yeah.
The other day, I bring another YouTuber here, a huge one. Probably you know him. He's from Portugal, Nuno Agonia. He's on the events. All events you could imagine before pandemic, he was there.
Yeah, I've probably met him before, in person.
He's a very nice guy. Like 15% of all Portugal population watches him because he's huge for the numbers, for the size of population in Portugal.
Yeah.
And then when I brought him here, and we talk about haters as well, somehow we get engaged in that conversation. And I said, how do you face that? And then he gave me an answer that surprised me. He said, you know, like in the beginning, I faced just like everybody does. But then I figured out something else, a thought that got stuck in my mind and never live out. And then I changed my behavior. I said, really, what it was? And he mentioned that sometimes someone is really depressed. Sometimes someone is really bored by something that happens at the job. Maybe the boss that day was a pain in the neck. Maybe the job that day was not good. Maybe he lost someone in the family. Maybe something happened with his girlfriend or boyfriend, whatever. And they just open YouTube and you are there. They're not even your subscriber and you're just there. And then they see something on you to, you know, just relieve their emotions and tensions, and they say something bad. And if I'm being somehow a tool for them to feel better, I'm fine.
That is a remarkably evolved way to interpret that.
My God, this is like, come on, he have to be a Buddhist or something. I said, Nuno, what the fuck, man? This is not the normal behavior, but I understand your point, but gosh, man, you are too elevated.
He's very, absolutely. And I admire that. I wish I were as evolved, you know, but there's a degree of, and I look, I've been that guy. I get it. I have complained on Twitter about people who didn't do anything wrong to me. They just happened to be there and I was having a bad day. I get it. at a certain point. I mean, I think that there has to be a degree of accountability. And if, again, if I'm in the tavern serving somebody a drink and you come in and insult that guy and then insult me, I'm like, yeah, man, yeah, I never need to see you again. I'm sorry. I'm sorry I had a bad day.
Your point of view is important because you are putting yourself as the owner of the bar, or at least the manager of the bar.
At least the manager. Right?
Yeah.
Right.
And then, right. And I know the feeling. You have to deal with a lot of drunk people.
Yeah.
I know the feeling. Yeah. It's different. You cannot elevate that much when you have everyday drunk people at your door doing right. shit to say, come on.
And it's important to say also that you can't, that's a slippery slope. You can't get into the habit then of deciding to ban every people who point out legitimate errors you've made. People who disagree with you but do so in a civil way. I would never ban those people. That's just destructive, narcissistic, and gross. It's the real bar. The real bar is like, are you the kind of person who is going to elevate the discussion or bring it into the trash? That's what it is for me.
Talking about the manager of the bar. As a manager on your own channel, as the owner yeah. of your own channel, how do you prepare? How do you create your content? What comes first? What's your process?
When it comes to making a review video, or really any video, it's pretty simple. It's pretty straightforward. There's a pipeline that I have that goes script, shot list, shooting, revising the script, recording the voiceover, revising the voiceover, editing the voiceover, editing the video, publishing.
You do voiceover, so everything starts first. With the script.
I do voiceover, well, before editing. Yeah, yeah, I have to, because the voiceover is what forms the bedrock of the whole thing. Because I never do this. Like, this is very uncommon. Most YouTubers, I think, are reversed. I'm the backwards version of most YouTubers. So I don't have an A-roll bit where I speak the whole script to the camera. I've never been set up to do that. As you can tell, like, things are not pretty behind me right now, because this is just a space where I do the voiceover. Everything yeah. that is on camera in my videos is usually an intentional shot. It's usually a shot that comes from the shot list that is derived from the script. Again, it's backwards. I think it comes from those days at Pocket Now of saying, well, we want to elevate this quality. Let's figure out a format that's best for that. And it comes from working within constraints too, because at the time I was filming in a bedroom, and you know, I could not create a set that looked very good behind me. So I would just, but well, everything honest, that shows up on screen is going to be B-roll. You know,
it's cool, man, because that's the reality right now. Maybe later you can improve if you want, if that's your wish. But come on, this is something very practical, something you use on day by day.
I think we stumbled upon a way to do it that was different, and I didn't want to do the same thing everyone else was doing anyway, right? So it was good. It was only once quarantine hit in 2020 where I literally had to film in my living room, and I had to think about that. Because in Boston, we had a Mr. Mobile studio, a whole thing. And down here, we were starting to build that. David Kogan at The Unlocker, Jaime Rivera at Pocket Now, Michael Josh at Gadget Match, David Amell at Android Authority at that time, and me. We all had a big Brooklyn warehouse, and we were going to build a big shared studio space.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
It was awesome. It was going to be great. And then we were in there for 3 months. We got it 20% built. And then, you know, March 2020, we couldn't be around each other, you know, and we decided to, well, it just went on too long. And we were like, we can't, we'll revisit this idea another time. We downsized a little bit. And I'd like to revisit that at some point. It would be really fun to build something at scale again like that. But, you know, things are so uncertain right now. I have to keep filming in my living room and occasionally on the road when I'm able to take road trips. What's your favorite
thing? One thing that I love on your videos, and I bet everyone else who watch you love as well, is the storytelling. For every single video, there is a storytelling behind.
Thank you.
You've somehow got one string on that mesh, one string only, and from that string, you pull a whole story about and the reason why that product is in that way, or your way of facing the product is in that way, because then this storytelling will, you know, it's like you're taking my hand and say, come with me.
Ah,
let me show you my point of view. Let me show you this product, you know.
Thanks.
How is that? How is that done in your mind? how much time you lost for that, how much you keep thinking about that. I believe it's quite time consuming, or maybe not. Maybe you're a super talent and say, yep, no, it's right here.
No, an enormous amount of time. It's funny. I was talking to someone who I worked with at one point, and he said, you know, I think we were trying to optimize my schedule or something. And he said, you know, I noticed you spent 13 days on a smartwatch review or something like that. We could probably get that down. I'm like, we cannot. No, we cannot get that time down, because that's how long it took me to figure out how to intelligently talk about the smartwatch in a way that won't put you to sleep and will teach you something. And that takes a long time. And I think that's, I am not often satisfied with the end product. So I'm very thankful to you for saying that, because, you know, I think with creative people, maybe you understand this. How often are you actually happy with the videos you put out? Is it?
Oh gosh, you're talking about here on the YouTube channel or Asus job?
No, on the YouTube channel or the job, it doesn't matter. Like when you deliver something, if you're like me, half the time,
I can tell you.
Worst video I ever made.
Really?
You really feel like that. I ship the thing and I'm like, oh, this is, I've done this trick before. I've made that joke before. I didn't tell you anything you didn't already know, because I got the thing 3 weeks late, and I'm just. And then, you know, often it does well, but I think that's part of the creative impulse, right? I mean, do you feel that ever? Or are you happy with everything you ship?
No. Well, I'm a very self... How can I say? Self-understandable guy. I know when it's shit, why it's shit. I know when it's good, why it's good. I got surprised when shit got good. I got surprised when good stuff got shit. You know?
Yeah.
So it's pretty much like this. So, like, I'm kind of very aware. I have this kind of awareness, like, people will face like this. But I think that's because my background on marketing, my whole life I was doing marketing, I was doing campaigns, and you have to have this feeling if people like it or not. So then you can prepare yourself and also prepare presentations for inside the company to justify why this campaign will not that good as they think, or why this campaign we want to do will be amazing and you should invest more on that. But you have to have the feeling that people will like it, because that's the final metric. Yes. And the other point is you have to believe in yourself to do it. Because even if you're doing something that you believe it won't be that great, no matter what is the constraint you have, if it's budget, if it's time, if it's lack of ideas, you have to do it.
You do. You have to deliver it, and yet, at some point it has to ship. You know, you're right. I just think it's a commonly seen thing among creatives, that we often don't like anything we ship. and often, like, you're not always in touch with what the actual reality is. I will always remember, we were doing a production of Saint Joan, a George Bernard Shaw play. And this director, who I desperately wanted to impress because he was a big shot. I remember two nights of this production. One night was me going through a whole show, not having any focus, not being in the moment, not being a very good actor, I thought. Came off at the end of the night, and the director was backstage, and he said, I think that was your best show yet. I said, all right, thanks. What show did you watch? 2 days later, we are rehearsing before the show, getting ready to start. I am in the zone. I am so hardcore focused. This is the best work I've ever done. I walk off stage by accident, fall through a lighting fixture, ruin part of the set. The same director looks at me from across the space, and he's like, Michael, where is your focus today?
It's just
not gonna work with us. So I don't know. I don't think we ever know. My creative type, man. I don't know. I think I never know if I'm shipping anything good or terrible.
Well, I think this is part of the creator, right? Like, let's put it like this. This is part of the creator daily life. You have to manage that with you. Your expectations about the own content you create, and also be true to yourself. Because if you start to love stuff that's not doing good, there's something wrong with you.
For sure. Yeah, absolutely. There are tricks that I know that I do in my content to make it appear better than it is. There are people like the sound of the voice, right? So even if the writing is subpar 1 week, they still want to listen, so it'll still work out. But you can't lean back on that. You can't relax and say, oh, I can just phone it in then. Because then, you know, that's the quickest way to obsolescence, right? It's the quickest way to being forgotten.
Correct.
Like,
correct. If you let it go, if you become like Elsa, you are screwed. You cannot let it go. Never.
Well put.
Ever.
Well put.
Yeah. So we're gonna open for questions very soon. So if you are watching on the Instagram here, you can come to Twitch, Marcel Campos. Actually, Twitch is Mr. Fields Underline. It's in English, easy for you guys. But in Portuguese on YouTube, it's Marcel Campos, just the name of my channel over there, my account over there in Instagram. So you can come to YouTube or Twitch, it's up to you, and make questions. And we're going to read some questions very soon. But before I read the questions, and you can start putting the questions over there, super chats and the questions you can buy on Twitch with your with the points, channel points, will be the priority. Okay, guys. So before I open the questions for everyone, I always do the same question for everyone I bring here since the beginning. And this question is always related to content creation. And the question is, for someone who is starting now and wants to do a tech YouTube channel, just like you did with Mr. Mobile, what is the best advice you can give to this person? And what is the worst sin this person can commit, can do it?
Oof. Okay. The best advice is to have something new to say that's not already being said by everyone else out there, or to say it in an interesting way. I don't think a lot of my insights are particularly insightful. I say it in a way that a lot of people will watch, which I am very thankful for. That's really important. The other important thing is, and you really need to walk this line. Remember before what I said about having a team?
Mm-hmm. I do.
I found that immensely helpful, both when starting Pocket Now, starting at Pocket Now, and starting Mr. Mobile with the Mobile Nations team. Having a team of people smarter than you is, you cannot match the benefit of that. But the greatest sin you can commit is not having any ownership whatsoever in the end result.
So I've said this. Kind of finding a balance.
You have to find a balance. You have to find a balance. You have to, ideally, you want to have the help of very smart people, but you want to at least have a little bit. Anything but 0%. You want to have at least a little bit of ownership in that end product, because otherwise you are in for a world of hurt. And I can't say anymore.
You have to feel yours. Yeah.
Yeah. You have to. Yeah. That's exactly right. So it's a very difficult tightrope to walk. But even if you get some things wrong, it's a pretty fun life doing what you love. So try it. Oh, yeah, no. The greatest sin is talking yourself out of it because you believe no one will want to listen to you. Don't do that. At least try it. I'm glad I did.
Great. Okay, guys, I'm putting the chat on the screen right now so you can make your questions. And while the questions are being formulated by you, please do your questions. We have Michael Fisher today here, guys. I know it's kind of tough for you guys. You don't speak English. You are Portuguese. I can understand. You won't understand what I'm saying, but maybe this can affect a lot of questions today, but don't worry about it, okay? I have a lot of questions about my home. What? Well, actually, just one came out from Eduardo Medeiros. He put a question here from the Twitch. He bought it with the channel points. And he say, good night, Marcel and Michael. Michael, being a content creator is your only business you have nowadays, or do you have other lines of business? I think he... Pardon his English, okay? Because Portuguese...
Oh, yeah. No, of course. I only speak English, so I am envious and very respectful of people who speak more than one language.
Thank you for that.
Of course.
And I think he's more curious about, is what we are doing today only YouTube channel, or do you have other business you are working on it that is not related straight?
Mr. Mobile occupies pretty much all of the time that I have that I am paid for. It's what I do full time. It's yes. But that other YouTube channel that I run with my dad is still very much active. Like I told you earlier, we do, I think, like a video a year. It's very, very slow, but we still put up videos there. That's at Rapid Nadion, RapidNadion. And, but that's it. YouTube is my, is everything. That's,
so it's 100% Mr. Mobile. And then it's a question of mine right now. Have you ever considered expanding Mr. Mobile to other platforms rather than what you have right now? I think you are very relevant on Instagram and super relevant on YouTube for sure. I see you on Twitter, but not that much as I see you on Instagram.
It's hard to answer because the Mr. Mobile brand is not something I own. It is owned by my publisher, and so there you will find me at other places on the internet going forward. Yes, I have been for years excited about the prospect of starting podcasts, which I did for a number of years at Pocket Now, and I'm very excited to do that again. And so you will see that for sure. Probably not under the Mr. Mobile name, probably under another brand, but I am looking forward to, ideally, I would like to have my cake and eat it too, right? I would like to continue doing Mr. Mobile videos for that audience and also broaden it to something different with a different flavor, something that's mine under a different brand. So
that's cool. So you consider to do podcasts, but do you consider to do podcasts with video together, just like I'm doing right here?
It is my preference not to, because I'm a podcast listener in the extreme. I listen to podcasts all the time and I never watch them. The visual component to me is less important than the audio. And so ideally I would like to do a podcast that's audio only, but as I'm sure you know, that's not a very sound monetary strategy.
Well, yes and no, right? To be honest, yes and no. Really? Because I think we are too addicted to the way that YouTube monetize videos, you know, that's true. Become the standard somehow.
Yep.
On the industry. If you do something like YouTube, you can win on video platform. If you don't do something like YouTube, you have to find another way to monetize that is simple as YouTube is. If you look to Twitch right now, Twitch has a very distinctive way to monetize, which are the subs. And the subs, like the members on YouTube.
Yeah, they pay per subscription, right?
But the good about it, if someone has Amazon Prime and almost everyone has it, they have one free sub per month. They can give to any content creator. So this.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes. The folks at Android Police, when they still had a podcast, they advocated that model quite heavily. Yeah.
Yeah. It's really good. 50, but again, when I look to the. When you go to the numbers, like on everything on YouTube is like 70-30, right? And everything on Twitch is 50-50.
Right.
But you can go to 70-30, but you need to be quite big and, you know, sign a contract, go into a different level. It's complicated. Right. It's not that easy. And Twitch is growing, not on outside games, a lot.
Yes. I've noticed that. I mean, of course, I watched the Bob Ross Twitch explosion with everyone else, right? I was like, oh, wow, this can be for so much more than people are using it for. And I have thought of that, too, actually, back when the pandemic first settled in and we all realized we weren't going to fly to Barcelona for MWC, Mobile World Congress. I very briefly entertained the idea of starting a Twitch channel and having a virtual flight to Barcelona in Microsoft Flight Simulator while talking to people on Twitch. And I wish I had done that.
That's a very good idea. If you can somehow change your background to inside the airplane, that would be amazing.
I might still do that at some point. We'll see. I don't know. You know, for IFA, even though IFA will probably happen, I'm not going to go.
I don't know. I don't know anymore. It's crazy.
Who knows? Right, you can't predict anything right now. Thank you for the question, by the way. Sorry.
Yeah, Eduardo.
Thank you.
One thing that is quite cool about that, you know, if you are doing a podcast and you have Twitch, because Twitch environment is pretty much only the live stream. Recorded videos, you know, if you upload videos on Twitch, you can do it, but not the core business of Twitch. And those videos, they don't ramp. It's the live streaming.
Yeah.
And if you are doing your podcast in a podcast way, audio only, right? You can stream on Twitch with all the errors, because actually this will not be advertisement later for more people, you know, will not be show, will not be recommended. Right. So yeah, that's true. That's a good point on using, okay, I'm going to do my podcast on audio format, but I'm going to monetize it through Twitch as well. So I make it start happening. And you can use it right now. Spotify is, you know, they have the Anchor partnership.
Yes, that's right.
And that's the same direction as YouTube monetization way, you know. So I think you can put those two together and you can bring something that maybe is a good start.
Yeah, I will. I appreciate that. I will start thinking about that. I am just realizing that my MacBook battery is going to run low, so I may have to dart for a power cord here in a second. But if there's another question, I'll take it in the meantime.
Yeah, let's take one more question here, and that's from Ricardo Junques. He's another YouTuber. He's a YouTuber from Rockets as well. I know him. He's a very nice guy. I brought him here.
Nice.
Ricardo asks, he says, awesome interview. Michael is such a cool guy. I love creators that do what you do. Tell people what others haven't told them.
Well, first of all, thank you for the compliments. What others haven't told them. Huh. That's a very broad question, right?
What? I think it's a trap. Be careful.
I was going to say, it sounds like one. What others haven't told them. I think maybe not a lot of people say this. Maybe they do. I think you really have to, if we're talking about creating, which I think we still are, you got to really want it. When I was an actor and people, I would ask professionals for advice sometimes, a very often heard piece of advice was, don't do it. It takes everything that you have and it doesn't often reward you. It gives you a lot of rejection. It'll give you a complex. It'll give you a drinking problem. Like, don't do it.
Even a drinking problem.
Yeah, right. It's the opposite. It's the opposite of what I said before, which is like, look, you really should try this. If you feel like you have something interesting to say or an interesting way to say it. But if you are not willing to put a ton of work in, you know, reconsider it. I think it can be a hobby for some people and whatever. I think if you're trying to do it as a job, it's, Ricardo probably knows, but it can be all encompassing and you have to be ready for that. I love it because again, I would be doing this anyway. I would be rendering my opinion in comment sections and message boards for free because I did it for years. And I'm very grateful I get to make it a job now, but It takes almost everything you have if you are my kind of person. Not every creator will answer the same, but that's what it is for me.
Yeah, but that's your opinion. That's what matters now in this interview. Yeah, okay, last question, and then we got to end it because we are running out of time. So Douglas and Sam, he sent a question here, use the points of the channel. Thank you very much on Twitch. And he say, good night to both of you. My question is more of a curiosity. Michael, have you ever been to Brazil? And do you know how to speak a little bit of Portuguese or not? That's interesting.
It's a great question. I have never been to Brazil, although I knew about Sao Paulo before I knew anything else about Brazil because they named a ship after that city on Star Trek Deep Space Nine.
I know. You are a big fan of Star Trek, right?
Yes, I am. Yes.
I have to do that with you. I'm sorry. I have to do that with you, okay?
Of course, yeah.
May the force be with you.
Oh, you trapped me. All right, I'm out of here. Goodbye. Use the force, Luke. Gandalf.
Oh, my God. Sorry for that, but I have to do it.
Okay. It's all right. I forgive you. What was I going to say? I've never been to Brazil. I would like to at some point, though. I think that would be great. But with the other question, though, I did have a better answer to. What was the other one? The other part of the question?
You one point is if you want to go to Brazil. Then you say you want to go to Brazil because São Paulo, because there is a ship on the Star Trek series.
Well, not just because of that. I would like to see.
But it's
like
a good connection. I got the connection. I love it. But to be honest, if you go to Brazil, São Paulo is a city, must-see city, but go also to Rio. Because Rio has beautiful beaches and you're going to love it, the environment over there. Yeah.
The other one was, do I speak any Portuguese? And I was in a bar called PJ's 19th Hole in Norfolk, Virginia in 2008. And I got to talking to a Portuguese chef. It was like 4 in the morning. And I don't remember anything else about this night except that he taught me how to say thank you, which I believe is obrigado.
Yeah. Oh, yes. Oh, my God. Yes, you did right.
And I, yeah, I, it would be because, funny if you taught me a swear word.
Come on, the way you said, you could be like with drink problems, talking to a Portuguese chef.
I know.
A long time ago, and he says something that is not exactly.
Right. So I've been saying for years, like, you know, I've been swearing at people thinking I'm thanking them. No. Obrigado. You know, he taught me how to say that, and I loved that. That's the only word I know. It's the only word I know in Portuguese. But I think it's a pretty good word.
Yeah.
Maybe I should learn a second one. What's the second one?
There's a funny story about this word. Very funny story, and you're gonna get it probably. I don't know if that's correct, but we tell this story everywhere for other people, especially foreigners. I don't know if it's correct, okay? So it can be a rumor, but it's very funny. So okay. The word obrigado, which means that there is no conjunction, you know, there's not parts of the words that are put together. It's just a word.
It's just a single word, yeah, right? Yeah.
Like we have other words like that, like saudades, which is a very unique word in Brazil. That it's an express of a feeling that is more than miss you. It's way more than miss you. When I desperately miss you, it's like saudades, something I feel inside, or I can miss something. I feel saudades of it. You know, so those are very unique words. Obrigado is another very unique word, and there is some rumors that the word obrigado, it becomes a little bit more international in the times that the ships from Portugal, they are discovering the world together with Spain, you know, Colombo, all this stuff, and then start to do a lot of business, trade business with several countries on Asia, with the ships and everything else.
Sure.
So they start to go to Japan, and they do a lot of business with Japanese guys, and every time they finish some deal, they say obrigado, and then the Japanese start to copy them and say obrigado, which becomes arigato.
Really?
I don't know. It's a rumor, but it's quite funny, right?
But that makes sense, though. No, that makes a lot of sense. I would believe that.
Yeah, yeah. Ouch. You can believe on that, but I don't know if it's true, but it's funny to know about.
I'm going to look that up. Yeah, it is funny. Yeah.
Okay.
I'm going to look that up.
Michael, I want to thank you very much for your time here.
Absolutely.
For being here actually today, and for all your good humor and the nice guy you are. Thank you very much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I'm sorry that I can't stay for the epilogue. We're at 6%, but I'm glad that it lasted this long, and I'm glad that you were patient with me as we figured out our schedules. Thank you for having me on. And
come on, we both have problems with schedule. Now everything's set. It's
we great. Do. And but it was great. It was great to see you again. I hope we get to do it in person sometime. And your audience is lovely. Their questions were great, and I thank them for their time too.
I am the one to have to thank you. Thank you very much, Michael. See you, man. Bye bye.
See you, Marcel.
Acompanhe as entrevistas ao vivo no YouTube e no Twitch. MC 101 é apresentado por Marcel Campos e publicado por Rede Geek Podcasts. Ouça esse e vários outros podcasts em redegeek.com.br.